This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Welcome back, to the junket scene.
Thank you. Nice to be back. Oh, I miss you guys too.
Oh, yeah. So how hard was it for you to get that tone right for this film of being dramatic but being musing?
Right.
And it's a good balance. And it is.
Thank you. I think that we realized at a certain point that the basic premise of the movie was pretty funny. And in a way, after that was understood, the more serious texture, the kind of human heart of it, we took really seriously. And I think that that's what the actors did. The actors had no sense of irony about the work. They had no sense of distance from these characters. And I think within this kind of funny, dark comedy, there's real human things and really emotional things going on.
Rachel, what did that platinum hair dye do to your hair?
Maybe we shouldn't talk about that. It's intense. It was a really fun color. It was fun to be platinum. And, you know, I think we forget, because so many of the photographs are, you know, black and white, that mm-hmm. women were really, I mean, very risque, you know. And at the time, it was very usual to be that blonde.
Was there some pale makeup, too?
yeah. It's very, very light, and I mean, I don't go out in the sun that much, but that was definitely even light for me. But I liked that. I liked the idea that she was kind of slipping, on the verge of slipping away, you know, of letting herself just disappear, and a little bit ghostly, and, you know, then Pierce sort of brings the color back for her, and, you know, her world gets revved up again. So.
When we cast the part of Kay, it was pretty easy to say, well, we need a woman who can walk into a room, and within the first instant of the movie, you understand why two men fall desperately in love with her, ruin their lives, and also why the audience does the same. And I think that that's something that there's a lot of beautiful women in the world, but there's not a lot of people who can carry that scene. And I was just remembering when we shot the scene when Rachel enters the club, that we wanted a sort of magical quality. And so what we ended up doing is she's actually walking in slow motion. Mm. And the camera reads it, but she's walking like
this. I felt very strange. And he was like, you look beautiful. I feel weird. And he said, just trust me. Go with it.
Well, because I think
I'm glad I did. No, you were right.
I think at the end of the day, this is a movie that says, this isn't life itself, but it's like life. It's bigger than life. And I think that's something we tried to play with.
I was just afraid I was going to fall.
Did you base it on anybody, an actress that you might have seen from the 40s? Or
I didn't, you know. I just kind of, watched, you know, as much as I could and just sort of tried to get the flavor down and hope that it would sort of go in by osmosis and then, you know, reinterpret it in my own way. The emotional life was what I was most excited about, and I hoped that the physical life would stand up and would be there in the end. But I didn't base it on anyone specific. No.
Rachel, after Mean Girls, did you make a conscious choice not to keep going the you know, college girl, teen girl route with The Notebook, or did things just start coming and they weren't that way? And that's,
I think, just nobody believed me as a 16-year-old anymore. I was like 25 playing 16, and they're like, forget it, honey. It's over.
But it seems like that was a role everybody loved you in. You made you very popular, and then you went totally in a more, I guess, adult, you know, same direction, but it just happened, or you just made a conscious decision?
Well, I think that Mean Girls stood out, you know, Mean Girls stood out to me as a very smart satire on teenage life, which I was excited to be a part of, you know, because it's, you know, what is happening in that world, and there's, you know, been some real growth, and so it, you know, that was, and I would not certainly be opposed to going, you know, back there, maybe not back to 16, but back to that genre. I think it's a really smart way of telling those stories.
I think any great actor is actually a good comedian at the same time, and I think Rachel has that sense of comedy, which is basically a sense of humor, which lightens things, even if they get really dark. And I think that those, all the great actors, I think, understand the entertainment of that on some level.
Rachel,
You did take a long break from working on projects, and now you're in a whole bunch of them coming up. What's that experience been like for you to be, you know, movie back to back to back?
Right. It's been really good, actually. I've had a little bit of time off in between each to sort of regroup. But after having taken a year off, I just found I was so ready. And I have to say, I was very inspired after I did Married Life. And working with Ira had such a great, you know, great experience that I was inspired to keep going. And it was just, it was so positive, and it gave me energy rather than depleting me. You know, some films can be very depleting, which is also good. It means you're giving a lot of yourself. But this one really built me up and prepared me for more.
Why was taking a break important when there was such momentum to your career going on? There still is, obviously, but
right.
that could be a risky time to take a break.
Yeah, it can be. I guess I just had to trust that it would all work out, because it was the right thing for me to do at the time. There was just no other way to go about it. So I had to hope for the best and just take my time.
But why, though? Yeah. You speak a little vaguely. Why was it the right thing for you?
Well, I had just been working quite literally back to back without any breaks in between, and just, you know, wanted to
have
just to relax and have a life. And you know, you really don't have a life when you're working. I always think, oh, I'm going to see everybody on my days off, and I'm going to read so many books and see so many films, and then you know 3 months go by and all you did was, you know,
it's a lot like the circus. I think that there is a way in which people you invest in the little world that you make a movie in. And I think in this one, I think that we had a certain kind of the four actors together, I think, had a very trusting ensemble. So I think there was a lot of emotional risk that you took, and I think all the actors took together.
Now, Ira, what is it that drew you to this particular novel, and what challenges did you face in the adaptation of it?
You know, I'd watched a lot of Barbara Stanwyck and Joan Crawford and Edward G. Robinson and film noir and all that kind of stuff. And all those movies were part of my imagination. Like, they were just part of my, almost like they were part of my past in a certain way. I was struck with how movies like that were able to take everyday life and make it much larger and more grand. And somehow the audience would gravitate towards it, and then they'd find out something about themselves in watching. And I found this pulp British mystery novel that was written by a British man who was named John Bingham. The book was called Five Roundabouts to Heaven, and he was both a spy and a mystery writer. And he was,
of course.
Exactly. And he was actually John le Carré's mentor in the MI5, and he was the character Smiley, was based on the writer of this book. I liked the fact that the film talked about that almost all relationships are either a comedy or a tragedy, and often they're both. And I think this film talks about how it just swerves from one to the other in the course of a romantic life.
Is the tone the same? I'm sorry, was the tone as comedic?
The tone is more conventional noir, but I think the premise is funny by itself. So I think once we realize that, I think I also would say that the film, the book sort of fulfills the typical genre conventions, and I think the movie is not a genre movie. It's a movie that uses genre to tell a particular, and I think quite modern, story.
Rachel, could you talk about what did you most pay attention to play this character? Because its other parts has a little bit kind of humor, but your parts kind of has to get rid of the some humors, but the kind of romantic, but it's not too romantic. It's because it's a kind of cheap romantic kind of looks like. So what did you pay attention to play this song?
Well, I think in terms of the romance, I think, you know, that Kay has already loved and lost the love of her life, you know, so she's really on love for the second time around, and that feels very, I think, I haven't had that experience personally, but is very different from, you know, your first love. And so that was kind of interesting to me, you know, what kind of love was she looking for? You know, was it more like Harry, more like Richard, who were very different? And then just also focusing, you know, we talked about her, you know, her, what her desires are, her desires as an individual separate from love. That this isn't, you're right, all about who loves who, how.
Another very different sort of relationship story is The Time Traveler's Wife, which is a very beloved book. Right. What's your take on that character?
Well, she's really a lady in wait often. You know, she's, it was frustrating in that way that, you know, she knows what she wants, but she can't have it. You know, and she has it, but it's so fleeting and it's always just slipping out of her fingers. So to have that kind of confidence in love from such a young age, and yet it's always slipping through the cracks. I mean, for me, even as an actor, it was a really frustrating dilemma.
How much do you actually get to work with Eric Bana if he's disappearing all the time?
Yeah, right. quite a bit. A lot of the effects, I think, will be done in post. So we were working, you know, really on the relationship.
The book was hard to keep track of, so I can't imagine you sitting as an actor going, now, when is this? And
right.
Where are we?
But, you know, what's interesting is that almost all films are like that. They jump around order, and you're constantly wondering, what's happened? What year is it? Who am I now?
Yeah.
You know, what's the moment before? What's the moment ahead? So I'd had a lot of practice actually for it. Yeah.
You have, with Married Life, you have a hell of a cast, and you're also working on State of Play, which has a hell of a cast. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, Brad dropped out, and then you land Russell Crowe?
I know. It was a good scenario either way, for me anyway. And it's been great. I'm, you know, sad that I don't get to work with Brad Pitt, but I'm having a hell of a time working with Russell Crowe. He's great. He's awesome.
And for the people who aren't familiar with it, could you just talk a little bit about your character in that, in State of Play?
Yeah. I play a political reporter. She's kind of the younger generation. She's a star blogger, and then Russell plays, you know, the more old school, you know, get out on the streets and find the story yourself and make sure it's the truth. And he's kind of mentoring me. But it really, I mean, that's sort of the peripheral story around a murder. There's more murder involved in this one.
It's always good to have a murderer or would-be murderer.
Yeah, murderer, yeah. Really.
Really?
Last question.
Patricia was saying that there was no rehearsal time. She likes that, and obviously I guess you like that too. But at the same time, she was also saying that everybody really kind of rehearsed by themselves. When you got on the set, were you kind of surprised, or how did that...
Well, I hope to be surprised on the set, because I think that's what you hope something happens that no one expects, and you hope that the actors are surprised by what the other actors are doing. It's a choice for me not to do rehearsals. I actually read an interview once with Sidney Pollack where he said he didn't do rehearsals, and I was like, oh, that makes so much sense to me, and I'm so glad to now know I'm allowed to do it. And I think that what I did is we set up time for these people to get to know each other a bit before we started, so there was a kind of intimacy among the four of them as an ensemble. I think it's a real ensemble piece. I think it's a real actor's piece, and I think we did create that. I like to if anything surprising happens, I want to catch it on film. So I try to shoot from the beginning.
And if I could ask one last question, can you guys talk about if you have anything else coming up besides, obviously you're filming, but could you talk about what you have coming up next?
I'm working on a film called The Goodbye People, which is based on the work of Gavin Lambert. It's a drama set in the end of the 1960s here in Los Angeles, and it's about intimacy and sex and drugs and Charles Manson and Joan, and Hollywood and the difficulty of maintaining intimate life.
Is this a writing-directing gig?
It's a co-writer. I'm working with Oren Moverman, who's my co-writer on this film, and also the co-writer on I'm Not There, the Dylan film. And he and I are working on the adaptation. And I'm to direct.
Cool.
And I'm to direct. Maestro.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Rachel, are you wearing any particular designer today, or is it just your own stuff? Or?
You know, I had a little fashion... hitch. So I'm wearing my own sweater over the dress I will not reveal to you.
You still playing Ultimate Frisbee?
Oh no, I missed out last year. I wasn't home. But I'll get back to it.
Now that
I was going to ask you if you have something scheduled after State of Play, or are you going to take another hiatus?
Hiatus.
Yeah, break.
Yeah. Another break. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm consistent.